talking yesterday, I guess. I don't know. It was not 100% clear, I guess. Just a brief description. So what I meant is, do everyone knows about coherent state here? Not familiar with coherent states? Like formally, they are eigenstates of the annihilation operator, which you must be familiar from harmonic oscillator. So, but in the context of quantum chaos, like the useful property is that they are minimum uncertainty Gaussian wave packets, in the sense that they saturate the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So for these states, for these states is equal to h bar by 2, and they are considered to be like most classical like states. So like they have a Gaussian form in position representation, and like so in the Gaussian form, like it can be localized at some x and p. Like consider the state to be localized around this value, and then like suppose we have this 1 degree of freedom system, and C here stands for classical. So suppose we have Hamilton's equation of motion, and this is our state, and evolved this classically using Hamilton's equation of motion, and evolved the corresponding coherent state localized at construct a coherent state localized at this state, and then evolve this state quantum mechanically using like Heisenberg's picture or Schrodinger's picture, and like in the Heisenberg picture, the state won't evolve, but the operators will evolve. And then at time t, like compare the expectation value of the position and momentum operators with the classically evolved value. So whether there will be a match or whether there will be a mismatch. So till in the Arnfest regime, there's a good enough match. You can approximate. Beyond the Arnfest regime, like this breaks down. Like so coherent states are the most localized states, and when you evolve these states, they no longer in general remain coherent states, except in specific cases like harmonic oscillator, and they become delocalized in the phase space. So that is what I meant by like Arnfest regime yesterday, and then we talked about like some epsilon as a function of time. So that was like, and then this Arnfest break time. So, like you can quantify that this Arnfest break time is very small for chaotic systems and large enough for regular systems. That was just a brief discussion I wanted to discuss. Any questions over there? Is it clear by any chance?
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, first time is the time it takes for the state to be delocalized. Is this this time scale?
So yeah, so like yesterday we were discussing about this Ahrenfest correspondence principle, where like the quantum mechanical averages of the position and momentum operators in suppose 1 degree of freedom system, when can it be approximated by the classical Hamilton's equation of motion, for example. So beyond Ahrenfest break time, the TEH, that approximation is no longer good. So, and yesterday there was also a discussion about measurement that brings in uncertainty. So just another comment on that. There are some studies, specifically, I would mention a 2004 study. So in this paper, the title is Transition to Classical Chaos in a Coupled Quantum System through Continuous Measurement. So in this paper, they studied a Hamiltonian, a particle which has a spin, and the position and spin degrees of freedom of the particle are coupled. So here, these are spin operators, and this is the term through which the position and spin angular momentum of the particle is coupled. So for this, they studied, like, upon continuous measurement, like any kind of measurement disturbs a system. So have you heard of weak measurements? Like a strong measurement completely disturbs the system and forces your system to be in one of the eigenstates of the measurement operator. But then there are weak measurements. Any of you have heard about weak measurements? Like weak measurements are such that you indirectly try to infer the state of the system without causing like the system to, the state to collapse. So in this paper, they studied continuous measurements, which is like the measurements should be sufficiently strong enough to localize the evolving quantum state. Like as we evolve the quantum state, just as in the Ahrenfest correspondence principle study, we saw that in general, the quantum state will delocalize in the phase space. But if you like apply some measurement, like I have not gone into the details of the paper, but the measurement is such that it is strong enough to localize, keep on localizing the wave function, stop it from delocalizing, but is weak enough such that it does not cause a lot of noise, such that it disrupts the evolution of the quantum system. So something like that. So using some kind of continuous measurement which satisfies those properties, they saw that there is a good agreement between classical trajectory and the quantum mechanical averages for a much longer period of time in regular as well as chaotic systems. Like the same system can behave, depending on the parameters value, B and C, the same system can behave regular or chaotic, like as we have seen in our standard map, for example, that as you tune the parameters, the system can go from regular to chaotic. So in both the regimes, they saw a correspondence like in the trajectory, and they also computed the Lyapunov exponent from quantum trajectory, and it matched the classical Lyapunov exponent to a good approximation. So since this discussion about measurement came up yesterday, I thought to mention this. Yeah.
Is this saying that things like decoherence are just important for talking about quantum chaos? Is that kind of what that says?
I mean, decoherence has been another approach mainly taken up by Zurich, and there are several papers from 1990s and beginning of 2000 by him, which took up that approach. And with decoherence, like in some models, they showed that you can recover the classical trajectories and classical-like behavior. So without decoherence in general, like if your states evolve, like if the system is chaotic in one direction, like in the you have this phase space quantum mechanics, right? So if we consider the phase in phase space quantum mechanics, in phase space, the quantum state can, in one direction, it can continue to expand. In another direction, it can continue to contract, like due to the classical Lyapunov exponent. And in that case, it can develop some sub-Planckian structures. Like there are studies in Wigner distributions, actually. So there are these phase space quasi-probability distributions in quantum mechanics, like Wigner functions and Huysmans functions. I'll discuss a bit about Huysmans function in today's tutorial. We'll do that. So there's a, I had read a 1995 Zurich paper in which they had described the quantum mechanical evolution using quantum study using the Wigner function. Like just like you have an evolution operator for wave function, similarly you can take a Wigner function and evolve it for a state. So in phase space quantum mechanics, so the thing is, if your state is pure, so these Wigner functions corresponding to those state actually develop structures at length which is sub-Planckian, because there's no limit to how much it can, it has to contract. These Hamiltonian systems are conservative, right? So overall, there can be saddle-like behavior. And if there are two, like if there are multiple Lyapunov exponents, they have to miss sum up to zero. And determine, there is some property about determinant. So overall, if the Wigner function is expanding in one direction in the phase space, it has to contract in another direction, so that this conservation holds, like divergence, the divergence of the vector field is zero because of this conservation property. So that develops, that leads to the development of sub-Planckian structures in these functions. So unless, so that's why Zurich invoked this decoherence, so that the structures beyond sub-Planckian level do not emerge. But so that is the thing in quantum chaos, that people, it is generally very difficult to study it analytically. So people study it using models. And there are so many different types of models. You can study few degrees of freedom, many degrees of freedom, like systems with infinite dimensional Hilbert space or systems with finite dimensional Hilbert space. So since people are studying different models and taking up results from there and inferring in a larger space, it is much difficult, like, to give some certain answer. So like that decoherence approach, many models, it was shown that it holds, but it is still unclear in that way whether it is can provide a complete answer to the quantum chaos question. Then yesterday we were discussing, we had started to discuss these signatures of quantum chaos. And we had discussed, like, classically you have trajectories, you have these position momentum variables. Quantum mechanically, given any Hamiltonian, you have eigenstates, eigenvalues, and then you can study the dynamics of any initialist quantum state. So if a system is chaotic, like, their signatures come up in all three of them. Like, there are signatures in the eigenvalues of the system as well as in eigenstates. So the first, like in eigenvalues, this is usually the most commonly used definition of quantum chaos, by the way. The first is level statistics. So what I mean by this, so level statistics will be discussed in detail in the next lecture. There is a guest lecture by another postdoc in condensed matter. In the next lecture, I'm just briefly describing it here. So level statistics is basically, you suppose you have these eigenvalues spectrum. Now consider these spacings. Like level spacings between nearest neighbor energy levels. And then consider the probability distribution of these spacings. So it has been shown for most of the models that if the system is chaotic, then energy levels show some kind of level repulsion, in the sense that two energy levels can't come very, very close to each other. They somehow repel each other. So in that case, for chaotic systems, like this was seen in the first time in some nuclear models, like where you have like a lot of protons and neutrons. So around 1969, I suppose, I don't remember the exact. So that is, this Wigner distribution was seen. Around that time, and for chaotic systems, this is how this distribution behaves. Since there is level repulsion, the peak of this distribution, it is at a non-zero value, and for a small s value, this probability distribution approximates as s to the power beta, where beta is generally taken to be 1, 2 or 4. So beta equals to 1 implies linear repulsion, 2 implies quadratic repulsion, and 4 implies quartic repulsion. And which one of them it will follow depends on the universality classes of symmetry in which the system falls. So this has been seen for chaotic systems. For regular systems, for classically regular systems, for the case of systems with more than 1 degrees of freedom, has been seen that the energy levels tend to cluster. These, so this, the distribution of this is Poissonian. So this is called Wigner-Dyson distribution. This will be discussed in detail in the next lecture. So I'm just covering some basics here. And this is called Poissonian distribution, like for regular systems, but with more than 1 degrees of freedom. There's something like, this is for s tends to 0. This is like this. So there is level clustering. In general, it has been seen that for regular systems, there is level clustering. And for chaotic systems, there is level repulsion. And that's why we have these kind of probability distributions of the levels here? Like level spacing, not levels.
A chaotic system, you mean the system that has regular Ehrenfest time? This system that has that distribution?
Sorry, for regular, can you please repeat?
What you say means like normal Ehrenfest time is not infinity anymore, right?
Like, yeah, even for regular system, it's not infinity. Like I'll show some numerics. But yeah, for regular systems in general, it is very long time. But like, and so there is another problem that I see in the literature, that there is in classically, you can divide the systems into integrable and non-integrable, right? And chaos is a property of some non-integrable systems, not all non-integrable. So non-integrability is necessary for, but not sufficient condition for chaos. Quantum mechanically, like non-integrability and chaos are generally used interchangeably, like because we still do not have a complete definition of non-integrability in quantum chaos, sorry, in quantum mechanics. So they are used interchangeably. So by regular, I would mean like for integrable systems, you would integrable systems of more than 1 degree of freedom, you will see this behavior. And for like chaotic systems, you will see this. But there are then systems which are non-integrable, but do not also show chaotic behavior for a small parameter like small perturbations. So there, mostly you see this kind of behavior only. So that's why I say regular here and not just integrable, because there are some non-integrable systems which will show Poissonian distribution when they are in the non-chaotic regime.
But then what do you say when a system is, how do you classify whether system is chaotic or not? Is we're defining the signature?
So that is the thing that the first, in the beginning, like, okay, this was found in nuclear physics, but then it was studied in some systems which have a classical analog, like Rydberg atoms. If you know, like, take hydrogen atom and consider the, when the electron has sufficiently high energy, not high enough that the electron is stripped off, but still it is at a higher level. So that is a Rydberg atom, and now you apply very strong, so that is still integrable, right? You have sufficient symmetries and constants of motion for hydrogen atom. Now you apply a very strong magnetic field to this hydrogen atom. Then it behaves semi-classically, like semi-classical physics describes it in a good enough manner. So that is one system, like you can study semi-classically as well as quantum mechanically, it's a hydrogen atom. So in that system, it was found this to be true, like one of the first systems. So it was studied classically and quantum mechanically. And second system was these billiards. I'm not sure if level statistics. Okay, for billiards, I'm not sure. But yeah, for Rydberg atoms, actually, in a strong magnetic field, it was seen. And then people started studying it in various models. So initially, they were studying systems which have a classical analog, but then now, like, there are several types of spin models, for example, these XXZ models or lattice, any kind of, like, take any lattice and put some qubits and have some interactions between different qubits. So these systems, they use, like, and they do not have a direct classical analog, right? If you take 20 qubits and place them on a 1D lattice, for example, and then you introduce either there is a nearest neighbor interaction or a next nearest neighbor interaction, something like that if you introduce. And then you study the level statistics of these systems. They do not have a classical analog, so we cannot classify integrability from there. But using this, they have started like classifying regular and chaotic systems that way, that okay, just take level statistics as the definition. Whenever you don't have a classical analog to the system.
Yeah, so in the beginning you start the system, it's like when the theory developed, you start.
Yeah, this, I think one of the first.
And system. Then, because classically chaotic systems showed this kind of behavior in the quantum regime. So they said that, okay, this is a signature of chaos, and now any system that shows this, they call it chaos.
Yeah. But that is the thing here, that there are systems, like I showed a standard map, and I discussed a standard map, and the time continuous version of it was the kicked rotor. You take a rotor and just kick it at every time period. The level statistics of kicked rotor, although it is chaotic classically, it's Poissonian. That is one of the exception, for example. And then, I don't know if you've heard about these billiard type systems, where like those are another classic systems that were studied at least in the beginning. Like for example, if you have a billiard table that is circular, for example, and suppose there is a disc in between. Now if you start at any point, like this is just the configuration space, it will track like the usual rules of reflection and it will have a regular kind of behavior. Yes, it will, most of the orbits will fill up the whole space, configuration space, but still it is very regular. There is no exponential divergence. So this was, so any kind of regular shape, like polygonal shape or some, these show actually regular kind of behavior. Then there was another billiard studied, I forgot the name of it. This is, consider this billiard table. So these are rectangular ends and then attached semicircles at the end. So this was another classic problem studied in 1980s, and still like stadium billiards are studied. So it has been shown that there are some regular billiards, like which do not show chaos, exhibit level repulsion quantum mechanically. So I'm just telling you the exceptions. That mostly it has been seen to be true, but there are exceptions. So we cannot accept it as a definition, right?
Yeah, that's why no one knows it.
Yeah, so that's the problem, that all the signatures that we know, there are some exceptions or the other. So then,
this is like a necessary condition, even if it's not sufficient.
I gave an example both ways, right?
Yeah.
So not just one way. So that's why necessary or sufficient, nothing implies from that. In general, it is seen that chaotic systems exhibit level repulsion, and that's why you have Wigner-Dyson type distribution, and regular systems exhibit these level clustering. Like the many energy levels can have very similar energy. So second is, which I'm not going into detail and I don't know much about it, is something called a spectral form factor. So in level statistics, we were only interested in the nearest neighbor energy levels, right? What about correlations between far off energy levels? So this is spectral form factor, studies correlations between far off energy levels. So there is some signature, something like that, but I have not gone into the details of spectral form factor. So I discussed a couple of signatures in the eigenvalues. Now, like others are eigenstates and dynamics. So just in dynamical properties, a couple of things. So one of the earlier measures, the studies, was this fidelity decay. I think it was proposed by Perez in 1984. So the thing is, as we saw yesterday, that if we start with two different quantum states and evolve it with time, the fidelity remains constant, right? That we saw yesterday. Because of unitarity of the evolution. Now, what if we start with the same quantum state, but perturb the Hamiltonian? So, evolve it with two different Hamiltonians, slightly perturbed, in the sense that consider a Hamiltonian, unperturbed Hamiltonian H0, and consider another Hamiltonian which has a small perturbation to this Hamiltonian. So now study the fidelity and consider the same initial state, evolution of the same initial state with two different Hamiltonians. So there is no reason that the fidelity between this state evolved with H0 and H epsilon will be restricted to any value, right? So that was the idea that can we use this to describe quantum chaotic versus quantum regular behavior? So initially, like Peres conjectured that for regular systems that will remain close to one, that this fidelity won't decay off a lot, and then for chaotic systems it will decay significantly. That was one of the conjectures, but that was found to be false in some systems. And then second thing was, how about the rate at which this decays initially? Like it can decay exponentially or it can decay with a power law. So the second conjecture was like, okay, it will decay like power law in regular systems and like exponentially in chaotic systems. But then there people also found some other systems in which, in fact, for regular systems, this fidelity decayed faster than exponential. So like someone proposed it and then it was refuted. And that was one thing. The other thing is the way this fidelity behaves, it was also found that it depended on the characteristics, in fact, of this perturbed Hamiltonian V rather than of the unperturbed Hamiltonian H0. And our original motivation was to study what is the like property of the unperturbed Hamiltonian, right? So all that happened like between 1985 and 2005. So then, okay. So that was just, I'm mentioning that this was one of the signatures that was studied but was found to be false. So then, another dynamical property which I have been like interested in, I mostly did it in my PhD. What about entanglement dynamics? Like if you have an initial quantum state in which there can be some kind of tensor product structure. If there is some kind of tensor product structure, then we can study entanglement in the system, right? So suppose we have some system like that, then if the system is regular and if we evolve an initial product state which does not have any entanglement initially, how much entanglement can be generated in systems when we evolve it using regular Hamiltonian versus chaotic Hamiltonian? So there are two things. How much entanglement can be generated, like the maximum amount of entanglement that can be possible in the evolved state. And second thing is rate of entanglement generation initially. At what rate entanglement can be generated? So it was like initially the systems that were studied, like you have two spin systems, suppose corresponding to spins J1 and J2, and the dynamics of the individual, like there's a Hamiltonian H which governs the dynamics of one spin. Now you consider a coupled spin model, like the Hamiltonian of first spin plus the Hamiltonian of second spin plus some epsilon type, some coupling Hamiltonian, which depends on J1, J2. So in the beginning of 2000, many studies were done by this, like for these kind of coupled spin systems, where the individual spins are governed by regular or chaotic Hamiltonian, like this Hamiltonian is regular or chaotic, and then there is a coupling between these spins, and how is entanglement generated, at what rate when the system is regular versus when the system is chaotic. So that was one of the studies, and there was like one study in which it was found that the rate at which entanglement is generated is related to the Lyapunov exponent of this Hamiltonian. But you can see that this can't be generally true, in the sense that it will depend on the coupling parameter and the properties of these coupling Hamiltonian, right? So those were one of the studies. So then there was a study related to quantum kicktop, in which there is only one spin J, in which you can give a tensor product. Quantum kicktop. So suppose you have a spin J system. Let us take an example of spin 1 system. So now if I consider 2 qubits, suppose the total Hilbert space of 2 qubit will be half tensor half, right? So that will be equal to 1 direct sum 0. Like the composite spin can be 1 or 0. You can break it into subspace. Now you can consider this subspace with spin 1 as a 2 qubit system lying in the symmetric subspace of this 2 qubit.
Yeah.
Like going from this picture to this, now go from this picture to this. Just consider only the symmetric subspace of 2 qubits. So likewise, you can generalize it to spin J. You can consider it as a symmetric subspace of 2J qubits. The Hilbert space of both the systems are isomorphic, that is equal to 2J plus 1 dimensional Hilbert space. Like the Dickey basis, I don't know if you are familiar with, like you just take this, for example, JZ operator and act it on JJ, not the basis of JZ operator, and which is this J comma M, where M goes from minus J to J in integer steps. So it is a 2J plus 1 dimensional system. So here I am, like here we are embedding a tensor product structure to the spin itself. So just in one spin system with a large spin J, not a qubit, we can study entanglement through this. We can consider any bipartition of this 2J qubit, right? And study entanglement in that. And here, if I have just one Hamiltonian that governs the dynamics of this system, like there is no external parameter that will influence the entanglement generation. It will be the internal dynamics of the system.
So the bipartition in this case would be this bipartition in the symmetric subspace only, or it is like symmetric?
In the symmetric subspace only. Like here we, if you have this state, you can study entanglement in this state, right? For example, or likewise, any state here will be a superposition of these 2j plus 1 states, and all of them will have a multi-qubit analog. Just that there will be a permutation symmetry.
So how are you partitioning the symmetric subspace? Because in, you have
like here I can just study 1:1 qubit bipartition, right? So 2j qubit you can consider any bipartition of 2j minus n is to n qubit.
Yeah, yeah.
Such that n is less than j.
Yeah. Got it.
So there were studies done in this model, like so this is the Hamiltonian for the model. As you can see, it is a time dependent Hamiltonian. There is a kicking and it has 1 degree of freedom. So if there was no kicking, then it would be an integrable system, and there is a integrable analog very well known, like which is called LMG model. In expansion, it is Lipkin-Meshkov-Glick model, named after three scientists. And when there is this time dependency, then it is known as kicked off. So as you can see, there are two terms. So the first term causes, classically, you can consider this spin as an angular momentum vector and study the dynamics of this angular momentum vector. So the first term causes a rotation, like consider an initial vector p naught. The first term causes a rotation of this vector about y-axis by angle p, and the second term causes a rotation of this vector p naught prime by an angle kappa jz. So it is a non-linear term, as you can see. So the amount of rotation about the z-axis depends on the z component of the angular momentum vector itself. So that's how non-linearity comes in, and it can show chaos. If it was linear, then it can't show chaos. So this is the dynamics, and as you can see, like there are two parameters in the system, Hamiltonian, p and kappa, you can see that, and there's the time period is tau. So the time evolution operator for one time period here can be written as u equals to this, and here you can see that these exponential terms are separated. This is because of the delta kicking. If the time dependence term was a general function, then that wouldn't have been possible. So this is, and the classical equations of motion for this, for p equals to pi by 2, and kappa is still a variable, is given by this. So x, y, z are just the normalized angular momentum vector, and j is the magnitude of the angular momentum. It will not change with time because the Hamiltonian is commutes with the square of the angular momentum vector, square of the angular momentum operator here. So the dynamics happens on a sphere of radius j. And so that's why we can use polar coordinates. And this is the classical phase space for kappa equals to 3. So here, and p equals to pi by 2. So here I have started with several initial conditions, evolved it, and then plotted the evolution. So the blue regions here denote the regular regions, and the red regions are the chaotic region.
So phi and theta?
So phi and theta, like this x prime, like x, since it is, we can study it using polar coordinates, right? Because the radius of the angular momentum vector is constant. So we are just plotting the theta and phi of the angular momentum vector. Is that clear to everyone? So here, like there are different kinds in the regular region, like there are different kinds of periodicity. So this is a plot from another paper, which nicely shows the different periodic orbits. Like so the center of this, you can see my cursor, right? So the center, maybe I should. The center here, this corresponds to a fixed point, and this also corresponds to a fixed point. So different color, these orbits are not related, but the center of these two actually corresponds to a period 2 orbit. Likewise, there is a period 4 orbit and period 8 orbit. So this is a plot with different values of kappa. For kappa equals to 1, you can see that it is mostly regular, just like a standard map. For kappa equals to 2, you can see that some of the tori have started to break apart, and then there are chains of elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points. For kappa equals to 3, like there are small regular islands, but most of it is chaotic sea. And for kappa equals to 4, the regular islands have shrunk to a very small region, and mostly it is chaotic. So this was an experimental study of the kick talk done in 2009, in which they study a 6-qubit kick talk. So this is the classical map here is slightly different from the one I showed, because this corresponded to an experiment. So they had to take into account the experimental imprecisions, like in delta function. So the map is a little different, you can see. And then they studied like time averaged entanglement in the second row. Here, this is the theoretical value, like as a function of initial condition. So in regular region, they found that, okay, the time averaged entanglement is small, and in chaotic region, it is larger. And experimentally, they also calculated the entanglement here. This experiment was done in cold cesium atoms. So experimentally, in the third row, the red dots are experimental values, actually. So they confirmed this, that, okay, experimentally, you also you see that that in regular regions, you have, on an average, it generates low entanglement. And in chaotic region, on an average, it generates higher amount of entanglement. And this was 1-qubit versus 5-qubit entanglement. So this was their claim, that pure quantum property of entanglement is a good signature of classical chaos. Then there was this another study in 2016 in which they studied a 3-qubit kick top experimentally using superconducting qubits. And they also have similar claims, that for classically chaotic dynamics, you have high entanglement, and regular dynamics, you have low entanglement. And then there was another theoretical paper in which numerically, like they studied a 2-qubit kick top, just j equals to 1. And on the basis of their study, they said that for chaotic dynamics, we will have medium level of entanglement. But for regular dynamics, it can be either high or low. So you can see the discrepancy, right, for small j values that in the claims. So that motivated me to study what is happening here. So to understand what is happening, I tried to study it by understanding the eigenfunctions itself. And since these eigenfunctions have a good phase space distribution in, like using Huissimi phase space distribution function, we can visualize the evolution of these eigenfunctions. So I'll show the Huissimi phase space distribution functions. So for that, like we just studied coherent states a bit. So in spin systems, the analogy of these most classical coherent states are these spin coherent states. So you, if you have any classical angular momentum state, which is like the state is theta phi, you can find a quantum state which is localized at theta phi, still has a distribution, but is localized at theta phi. So this is the spin coherent state. And how do we construct these spin coherent state? You take this JJ state and apply a rotation operator in the theta phi direction. Just like for coherent state, you take the vacuum state and apply a displacement operator there to get a coherent state in some other, at some other location in the XP space. So likewise, in theta phi, that's what you do. And how to study the phase space distribution, like the values of the color here, what do they represent? They represent the like Huissimi phase space distribution function, Q of theta phi, which is given by this quantity. So theta phi is a spin coherent state here, and rho is the quantum state of which we want to study the Huissimi phase space. So as we evolve the system, like if we start with a coherent spin coherent state and evolve it with some Hamiltonian, in general, it will not remain a spin coherent state, right? It will spread, start spreading on the phase space. So that's how the evolution will look like in general. So, and rest of the plots that I'll show will be without this normalization factor 2j plus 1 by 4 pi, because the rest term for pure states gives a nice probability interpretation, right? Mod square of theta phi, like overlap between theta phi and the quantum state. So the plots that I'll show will be in the theta phi coordinate system rather than on the sphere. So this is the equivalence I'm just showing. So I'll show the dynamics of a period 2 orbit. So just reminding of where the period 2 orbit exists, like the center of the green island basically is a period 2 orbit. So here I'm studying the evolution of the period 2 orbit for j equals to 40 and kappa equals 2.5. And classically it is stable. So here you can see that the quantum dynamics basically mimics the classical dynamics in a way, right? Like classically, it is a period 2 orbit, and quantum mechanically also, we see that it is just evolving in that manner. This is the Huissimi distribution of the evolving quantum state, basically. So this is where like the Ernst correspondence holds in a way. So this is j equals to 40, and but here I have just shown few quick plots for j equals to 10, for example. With there the correspondence is not so strong, like the correspondence with the classical dynamics. But for j equals to 40, we see a stronger correspondence. So overall, the thing is, as you go on increasing the spin value for regular systems, you will see a much better correspondence for a longer period of time. Here, just like increasing the spin value is like going in the semi-classical limit, right? Like the higher the spin value j is like closer to the semi-classical limit, where the correspondence with classical physics is like better. So on the other hand, like I have started with an initial condition which lies in the chaotic regime, and you can see how it evolves. Like the Ernst correspondence breaks down immediately, like in a few kicks. So here the evolution may not be clear because I have the color axis exactly from 0 to 1 here. So this is where the color axis changed, so you can see the evolution more clearly. And you can see that the correspondence is breaking down very, very quickly, like for a very few ticks. So I showed one case of regular regime and another case of chaotic regime. So what I found is that, like, I was trying to understand these different papers were claiming different things. What I found is that till you have a localized evolution, you get a low entanglement. And the moment you start having a delocalized evolution, the generation, the amount of entanglement generated can get high actually. And for small j values, like just for this case, this case for j equals to 10, for example, it is not localized enough. So here, for example, even in regular regime, you can get slightly higher value of entanglement, if not maximal. So here you can see the importance of unfest regime coming into picture. That in general, like, people are trying to correlate the amount of entanglement with classically regular versus chaotic dynamics. And what in my studies, I found that till unfest break time, like, the evolution is mostly localized. So for localized evolution, you see the amount of generated entanglement is small. But whether you are in the regular, your system is regular or chaotic, as soon as you go beyond unfest regime, the amount of generated entanglement is higher. Like, since your system delocalizes in the phase space, it generates more entanglement. And I had some analytical understanding of that using some inequality for Vonnegut entropy, which is the inequality is called Pan's type inequality. I can discuss it later if someone wants to discuss that. So that was about the dynamics, right? Dynamics of initial states. What about eigenfunctions? Like, so here I have plotted the Huysmans distribution for a few eigenfunctions, and we can see that if your classical phase space is mixed, for example, like in the sense that there are some regular islands and then there is some chaotic sea, you can classify your eigenfunctions also like into regular and chaotic eigenfunctions, depending on the support the eigenfunction has in the regular versus chaotic region. So here you can see that this eigenfunction has support in the regular region of the phase space, right? Is that clear? If you see a correspondence between the two figures, the support, like the areas where the color is dark, that is where the Huysmans, like the value is high. So that is where the support of these eigenstates lie, and that corresponds to the classical regime where the dynamics is regular. So in that way, we can classify like this eigenfunction as a regular one. So this is another regular classification, like the dynamics has, the eigenfunction has support in the regular islands here. This also, for regular islands, there is a period 4 orbit. It has support on the period 4 orbit. But on the other hand, this is an eigenfunction which has support in the chaotic sea of the phase space. Like it, the regions of the phase space where there is classically the dynamics is regular, the probability distribution function is very, very small or zero in those regions. So this eigenfunction can be classified as chaotic. Like, these are vague classification, not very strict classification, but it is a way to understand what is happening. Like, if we just write analytical equations or numerical values of these wave functions, we don't understand what is happening there, right? But using phase space distribution functions, It gives us a way to understand more qualitatively these eigenfunctions. So this is one for chaotic. This is another one also which has support in chaotic region. Another one also which has support in chaotic region. This is an interesting case, which is where it has support on unstable periodic orbits. It is still chaotic, but it has support on an unstable periodic orbit. And these are in general called quantum scars in the literature. That was another field of study in 1980s. And it has resurfaced in the form of many body quantum scars since 2018. So, that is what I wanted to discuss today, that, okay, you have these space distribution functions for these, and using that, you can visualize these eigenfunctions, at least for simple systems where your degrees of freedom are just one or two. And you can gain insight what is happening, and you can clearly see the difference between chaotic versus regular dynamics and chaotic versus regular eigenfunctions.